Welcome to the Learning Minds podcast, the official podcast of Khyber Medical College. I'm your host, Noore Rabia, a member of the class 2027. Join me as we dive into the world of medical innovation, uncover insights from leading experts, and explore the inspiring journeys of those shaping the future of healthcare and research. In this episode, we're honored to welcome our esteemed guest, Dr. Noore Kiran Naik, who is an excellent medical educationist, a renowned gynecologist and an obstetrician, a subfertility consultant, and an IT expert. Her areas of interest include technology-enhanced learning, student and faculty development, and research. She has also developed multiple online courses for both undergrads and postgrad students in international collaborations. Her expertise in TEL leads her to be the head of a decoding EDU platform, offering online training to students and teachers. She is currently heading the Department of Medical Education at Abba Medical College, Pakistan, and also acts as Director of Innovation and Technology of Medical Women Association, Pakistan. Thank you, Dr. Kiran, for taking out time out of your busy schedule and joining us here today. We're pleased to have you on our podcast.
Thank you so much, Ms. Noore Rabia and the team to have me here. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Okay, Dr. Kiran, being a gynecologist and an obstetrician, what is the most rewarding aspect of being one?
When I think of it, really, the cry of that newborn baby is that one thing that makes us forget all the worries and the tensions and all the fatigue that we have had. When we see a mother smiling with tears in her eye and having a healthy baby holding in her hands. So that's one thing, that's really an achievement which we cannot account for in this world. So I think that's one thing that really brought me into this field and made me pursue my career in obstetrician and gynecology.
Okay, ma'am. That's really nice to hear, like, such nice words from you, because, like, this is one thing we're all, like, looking forward to, like, a new baby born and, you know, hearing the first cry. So what advice would you give to someone currently in medical school who is interested in this specialty?
Okay, interestingly, over the passage of years, I've seen that people are reluctant about joining this field of obs and gyne. Probably because of the demand of time and energy it has, and it's really become tough for everyone to manage. And what they are actually seeking then is a very strong support system around them from the family and the relatives and the kids, and they have to run a family. So unfortunately, this is a sorry state of matter that this field is not being one of the chosen field. But those people who get into this field, I can say that one of the main motivation remains that it caters for women health in normal and both abnormal phases of her life, including her young reproductive system, the time she gets married, the time she gets old. So there is a whole lot of paradigm in this field that a female doctor or anyone who is interested, even male are coming now, they can pursue the career over here. And in any case, we often say it in a very casual way that this field will never end. The population will keep on growing. So this is one thing that is going to be happening, and the babies are going to be born and help is going to be sought out, and we are going to cater for that. So this is a never-ending field, and it is, alhamdulillah, now growing with the advancement in technology. And people are motivated for, number one, selflessly working for the female gender. Like, I am one of those people who wanted to work for the female gender of my country. Secondly, they want to earn more. And thirdly, they want to have a big name. So these are really main reasons that people want to join, and people do join.
Okay. So, what are some of the biggest challenges you actually faced in your practice as a gynecologist and an obstetrician?
I didn't have any difficulty in understanding the concepts, and my training was done excellently in my training institute as a postgraduate resident. However, when you are getting yourself trained in any department, like when I talk about obstetrics and gynecology, especially in Pakistan, and I often say to the other people as well, we somehow, even now in this day and age, lack that female leadership that should be done from our own department. For example, and let me give you an example. It becomes really tough and challenging that you are working and operating in a BHU, like in a small setup like me, and I am not that skilled and I have to call a surgeon. So somehow or the other, we in a department are dependent on our surgical field, on our medical field, on our anesthesia team, on our neonatology team. So this is not a field that we can work alone. So this is a very, there is a need to have a very good collaboration among all disciplines which can make this field work. And this is one main problem that many people face difficulty in, that you have to have a very good team network and you have to build your network once you are in a practical field. Secondly, you as a person have difficulty in managing your time and managing your personal commitments along with this aggressive commitment. Emergencies can happen anywhere. Babies are born every minute and you need to be available everywhere. So you need to sacrifice some of your time and your life and your commitments at the expense of probably making arrangements for your even children and making someone else work for you. So that is one thing that really gets challenging at times. And thirdly is the burnout element. This is one thing that our faculty are not trained much. And recently they have quite an evidence that the people from surgical and in surgical departments and gynae and obs are the two specialties that are more prone to having a burnout and fatigue. So strategies should be there to having probably scheduled rotations, days off during workplace to give them a little break and to make them me alone time so that they can recover and come back to work.
So you are an excellent medical educationist too. So can you please tell us about your experiences like integrating like technology into the curriculum? Because like you are one of the best medical educationists so far, right? So you want to know a little bit about that.
Okay, thank you for your comments. I'm really humbled. And I believe for me, pursuing medical education helped me realize the learner in me. And for being a learner, and when we talk about innovations and technology, you need to be very curious. You need to go out and you need to start experimenting, look out different tools and different instruments that are available online for you to use. For example, right now, there are various GPTs available, LLM are there available in AI. So no one is going to teach you. You are the one who are going to get up and work on your own, and you need to really polish yourself and polish your skill, because the next coming 10-20 years is going to be the skill-based education and skill-based job offers would be there. So unless you build on individual skills yourself, that only having an MBBS degree or only having a big degree, it won't help you. People are looking for other competencies when they hire people and when they look for other things. So for me in innovation, I think the biggest thing is always keep asking questions and be as curious as you can. And okay, listen to other people, but do whatever it feels best for you. Because I remember my father giving me this advice that whatever you feel like doing, you do it, you plan it, and you do it now, because maybe later in life you would still be there, but your passion may not be there. So you need to think into that account. If you can manage, you need to do that.
So in order to polish our skills, as just like you said, we need to polish our skills. So can you like please tell us about the different internships, research opportunities, and mentorship programs for the students so that like they can like, you know, improve their skills and kind of be better in that things?
Yes, thank you. If that is an excellent question. Actually, we do as medical educationists propose the continuous professional development program, in which we have this formal program and we train faculty and students as well how they can even manage themselves year to year basis. I'll tell you my example. For example, every November, I take 10 days off from digital and I do a digital detox. And in those 10 days, I take up time for the first 5 days. I'm collecting the information, the activities which I have done the last year, And then I take 1 or 2 days out of the 10 days to reflect on what I have achieved and what I needed to achieve, whether I have achieved, and next, what I am going to achieve for the next year. Okay, what are the next courses? And I would be looking and I would be having a mental mind map and joining courses and moving on and then. And in the last 3 days, I have some sort of a plan in my mind. So this is a good thing. And with this digital burnout being out, we do need some kind of a detox. So I do it really often, and I tell everyone and my family member that call on my daughter's number and do not contact me. And they're like, okay, something has happened. So it's fine. So I would advise all of the students that learn to manage yourself. Take some time out for yourself as well, because life is too fast. Everything is happening. You are involved in so many different activities, mashallah. But in the same time, it's better that you also have a plan of your own and you work at your own pace. Maybe perhaps someone would be doing 5 courses a year and someone would be doing only 1 course. And there are different opportunities. There are already free online courses, webinars, and wherever you feel like. There is no age limit. I don't believe that there is a limit that you cannot do anything because you are just an undergraduate student. Why not? People are inventing, like last night mentioned, that people have invented Foley's catheter and Fogarty's catheter while they were medical students. So why not you all? So just keep yourself open for opportunities.
Okay. Ma'am, we want to know, like, what are the current technologies and advances, like, you know, should use in the medical education, like the technologies, so like the students can be taught in a much better way.
And yes, we have been working on different, just like we have different competencies in undergraduate medical student. The PMTC has 7-star doctors, leadership, role model, knowledgeable, skillful. We all know that these are the 7-star. Now there is a new era. I have already have done work on the digital competency, and now my next project is on the AI competency. What are the skill sets of medical students expected for using and understanding artificial intelligence? So in that upcoming, some of the themes may revolve around the NKH approach that I introduced, the new knowledge approach, help in which you need to first do a review. Find out different tools that are being used for AI. Know, have an understanding of the conceptual framework of how these tools work. And finally, use those tools in your practice. And you keep on experimenting. And this is a cyclical process. It's not a linear process. You keep on experimenting and building upon that. And this is how the AI tool works. The second competency that I would really want that our students to develop is the ethical use of artificial intelligence tool. Then to use the AI tool ethically. Because many of our teachers are saying that the AI tools are being used for plagiarism and copy and pasting. And it's really important that we need to work on these competencies. And inshallah, with the time, we would be able to develop a framework.
Okay, ma'am. As a medical educationist, like, what are the biggest challenges you face when you're designing a curriculum for the students? Because you have to design one, and at the same time, you have to keep like a lot of things in your mind as well, accordingly. So
the current state is the state that we are having 3 different generations. Number one, the generation is of 1960s and 70s, who are our teachers and who are in higher official authorities. They are a separate school of thoughts. And there is a whole lot of generation. These are the behaviorists and baby bloomers and everything. Then the next generation is like me. I am from 1980s and 90s. So we are the one who have seen the shift from normal TV to remote control TV and then to telephone to mobile and everything and computer. So we are the one who were in witness of all these transitions. So we are the main teachers who are now right now actively involved, but not in the policy development. So that's the difference. And the third generation, the third stakeholder is you all guys. You guys are the millennials. Millennials, yeah?
No, Gen Z.
You are the Gen Zs. And now the millennials, okay, my son is the millennials. And believe me, there's when we talk about curriculum development, we need to keep all the stakeholders together. So I think this is the biggest challenge. If I want to teach my students AI, but my policy developers, they won't allow us to teach AI. So why, what would happen? Where would we middle people go? So we are rolling here and there. So it's like the whole system that needs to be really well integrated. And this is the biggest challenge that we face. And even in COVID, I was really lucky that my PhD is on online learning environment. So I was really lucky that COVID came because no one was otherwise doing online learning. So COVID was a blessing for me because it gave me a chance to work on my area of expertise and allowed me to interact with others. But unfortunately, we never came back. We never took up this online learning as an integrated in our education. So this is something because our policy development is not at that pace. So this is some big issue that we need to address.
Okay, ma'am. So you have such a successful career, mashallah. And like, how do you manage your responsibilities as a mother, wife, and like a professional? How do you keep the work-life balance?
Alhamdulillah, I am really truly blessed because I think everything happened for a good cause. And like we were previously discussing, that time management is very important and personal management is very important. For example, just giving you a brief example, if me and my husband, we started our training together, to we planned our 4 years together. First year I gave IIM and second year he gave IIM. Third year, I gave my dissertation, wrote my dissertation. Fourth year, he wrote his dissertation. And then we again had turns in taking exams. So I think you need to be ready, vigilant. You don't just live by the moment. The plans like these should be really properly sought out and planned. And you should have a really good management skills. This is one area which our students are not taught. We do not have any separate module for management skills and how to manage time, how to manage stress, how to manage conflict, how to manage anger. These are the issues in which makes us frustrated. So I think if we need, we can cover these up, though a lot of our problem will be solved. Number two, the support system. Learn to identify the people who can support you and who can positively inspire you. A lot of different sort of people would be there. And unless you find that support system, your friend who is there at your back, even then, even if you are not talking to him daily, but once in a while, that would be a great help. So learn to find that support system to keep you going.
So like, just like you talked about time management and support systems, what are your time management strategies and your support systems?
My support system is, my biggest support system is my mother, alhamdulillah. And my father had been inspiring for us. And basically what they did was to empower us for female, I have three sisters. So we are four sisters and one brother. So my family, my parents, they empowered all each of us females there so much that we were able to think independently and behave independently, address our emotion independently, and finally the financial independence. How many of us females have this financial independence? I don't think so. Unless we empower our females and our sons to have this financial independence and to monitor everything, that is the point when you will feel, okay, now I am at a verge of making decisions on my own. So this is one thing that we do. Secondly, you just like I do, I also empower my kids. And they are doing their own laundry right now. And they are doing their own dishes. Although we do have a support system, but I keep on saying that you need to be independently able to manage yourself. This is a life skill. And both male and female should be able to understand this. Time management, my day is very structured. And I at times start on Friday evening. I have a to-do list for the next week and I keep cutting and maybe get my daughter involved in it because my kids really enjoyed cutting everything off and I like them seeing cutting everything. So we have the thing of gamification in our home and we just have it for fun and that makes me motivated as well because they are also pushing.
Okay, ma'am. What would be your advice for undergrads pursuing medicine as a career, especially for females? Because for females, it's not just a career, you know? They have to do a lot more than that. So what is your advice for them?
I think my general advice for everyone would be that right now you are at the point of making a base of your building. So do not forget that you have to pass all the exams and you have to keep your academics going as well. It's good that you are in extracurricular and co-curricular activities. Keep yourself alive as well, because that is a point where you take out your stress and you feel relieved. But in overall, just manage not to fail any exam. First day of my orientation, in I tell my student, do not fail any test, do not fail any exam. Keep on learning, keep on asking questions. Do not feel that I would ask a stupid question. No question is stupid. Inventions have occurred out of that. So if you can't ask in public, go to your teacher separately and have a meeting with him, and keep open, keep yourself open. But for undergraduate, it's really important for you to have this base developed, number one. And on the top of that, you can have little plans there of different activities. But first, your base should be developed. There is no question about that. And then you can build that garden up of your activities. For the females, I think it's one and the same thing at the undergraduate level. There is no problem. But after you graduate, you need to choose a career. And career are really influenced by the factors like we previously discussed. And for females in our setup is where we have a different societal setup. So maybe they get married, whom they are getting married, and where would they would be living further. So it's really important for them to realize that, take this decision very wisely and sanely, and parents are often helping them in it. So some things are there, and I've seen many gynecologists who are so successful in their career and their family life is so good, and just because of the way they are managing. So you need to be extremely, the females need to be extremely emotionally intelligent, and need to develop social intelligence in order to tackle with the issues that may arise later.
So this is like the last question, one of the last like few questions for you. So like, as in case of researches, what skills are required for students and professionals like for good researches?
For good researches, you first of all need to understand the process of research, what are the different phases of research, and how to do that phases as transparent and honestly as you can. Because if you are unable to replicate your own research finding on paper, I did this, I did that, and your methodology section should be the one which should be the longest, I think. Because research is something that needs to be transparent and given on to the audience who can take your methods and do research. So my biggest method, message to you over here would be that be ethical in practices. Do not hurry. Do not hurry into data collection. Do not go into fabrication. There are no shortcuts in research. This is a process that you learn over time. And the one tip I would like to give you, if you guys can get involved in any peer review systems like Curious does, and there are Curious other journals as well, like Curious, if you can start doing peer reviewing of different manuscripts and they allow undergraduate students, that is a lot of learning experience. You start reviewing other people's articles and then you learn, okay, now this is how he has written and this is how I'm going to review, and you can improve on yourself.
Okay, ma'am, thank you so much. Like, do you have any final insights or advice for the listeners of our podcasts?
I always give one last message that life is too short, and there is still so much things to do. Life would go on. You would always be a learner. So just live to learn and dare to dream, and do that and pursue that passion before the time goes out. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kiran, for joining us today. We're very honored to have you on our podcast, and we believe our audience would love to hear this podcast, especially our female students here and others, our female faculty and everyone around. It was very, very nice of you to join us today and take out time out of your busy schedule. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day. Allah Hafiz.